It's good to be back in the Show Me State this morning. I didn't know if we were going to be here or Georgia this morning. We got stuck in Atlanta last night when we were going on vacation and said that we were going to stop through Atlanta. The first words out of Dad's mouth were, "Ah, Atlanta." He was right. Atlanta, for some reason, when they get the plane on the tarmac and parked in the area, they got the door there. And they've got it's the jet bridge that they've got to get lined up with the door so everybody can get off the plane and deplane. Apparently the guy that's supposed to line up the jet bridge with the door of the plane wasn't able to perform his duty very well. And so we sat on the plane just long enough for us to sprint through the airport and miss our next flight. So anyway, we made it in late last night. Glad to be back this morning. Had a good time on vacation. We were in the Charleston area, had good weather, had a good time. Boy, vacations, they can be very fun, they can be very interesting, but it's always good to come home and sleep in your own bed. No sand in that bed. It was nice. We bring greetings from a congregation on St. John's Island, South Carolina. I thought I'd better wear my whole suit this morning. If you've ever traveled and attended services with other brothers and sisters in another spot, generally you're a little underdressed if you're on vacation. We were four of about 250 black folks, and we were very underdressed. Everybody had suits, all the men, they had their handkerchiefs in their pocket, and the ladies had hats. They were hats too. They were interesting hats, but it was a good congregation. They were very warm and friendly. They were encouraging to us. We had a good lesson. The lesson was about going through some struggles before you get the blessings of the Lord. They talked about the lesson in Matthew chapter 15, the woman that came to Jesus who had the daughter that was demon-possessed, and how she had to tell the Lord about the difficulties in her life. How difficult it must have been for that woman to even approach Rabbi, teacher, Christ. Women just didn't come up and talk to men like that, the teachers in the synagogues on those days. And she had to tell about the problems going on in her family before she could receive a blessing from him. It was a good lesson. We enjoyed it. You know, while we were down there, I was thinking about lessons to give and had a lot of inspirational things. We had the ocean. And I thought about all the stories in the Bible about the ocean, how deep and wide it is. We thought about all the sand on the seashore and how the Lord counts and He knows every grain of sand. And that sand at Charleston is so fine. It gets inside of your clothes, inside of your hair and your ears. You can't get rid of it. Thought about a lot of different ways to give a lesson, but I was inspired by one little thing at the entrance of our resort on this island called Kiowa. And as you drive through the toll gate, it was decorated, had beautiful flowers growing, and there was a couple little flowers right at the front. They were tall, they had a big pink head on them, they had real prickly leaves and spiny leaves all over them. You know what it was? It was a huge thistle. They were growing a couple thistles as ornaments for decoration. I thought, we kill those things back here in Missouri. You got to pull them up by the roots. You got to spray them and get rid of them. And here they've got one, this ugly weed, as a decoration for this beautiful resort. So I got to thinking about that weed and got to thinking about the parable of the wheat and the tares. The parable of the wheat and the tares that Jesus tells in Matthew chapter 13. This island had houses that were enormous. It used to be owned by a single family since the early 1600s. The houses were enormous. Their cars that they were driving on this island weren't like our Hondas. There was a lot for sale just down the street. 0.66 acres. $5.5 million for a lot of sand. You know what else I noticed that was not on the island? There were no churches on this little island. So we had to leave and go to another little place to worship on Sunday morning. No churches on the island. All these beautiful things. All this money, all this wealth. No churches. Some inconsistencies here on this island. Don't know. Just didn't make sense. Where is God at in all these things? All these people seem so blessed with all of these things from the left and from the right. Does God not see this? Is he not witnessing what's going on here? Is he not concerned? You know, this is especially difficult for us as Christians when there is the appearance that evil is being rewarded. Now, I'm not going to say that all the people on this little nice island weren't living good Christian lives, but from the things that I saw while I was there, it tended to lean the other way. People were more concerned about their possessions and their things and their status rather than the Lord. It seems that a lot of things were being rewarded that shouldn't be rewarded, that evil in some way was being encouraged and coming out as the victor. You know, I had Dwayne lead that song, Farther Along We'll Understand It, All By and By. And that's true. Later on, whenever we know things better, when we see face to face instead of dimly through a mirror, we're going to understand what God's plan is by and by. But in a very real sense, there's a passage that I want to talk about this morning that will show us that we can understand what seems to be an inconsistency. We can understand that today. We can understand this situation. And while I appreciate that song that Dwayne led, I want to know about it today. As we live our lives by faith and strive to be distinctive people of Christ here in this world. Let's everybody turn to Matthew chapter 13 and look at this parable. And Jesus, through the teaching of this parable, unfolds the plan of God. Sometimes we use that phrase, well, what's the plan? You got a plan? What are we going to do tonight? What are we going to eat for dinner? What's the plan? God's got a plan for us. And here it is in Matthew chapter 13. We're going to start in verse 24. He says, another parable he put forth to them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed seed in his field. But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. But when the grain had sprouted and produced a crop, then the tares also appeared. So the servants of the owner came and said to him, sir, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then does it have tares? And he said to them, an enemy has done this. The servant said to him, would you want us to go and gather them up? He said to them, no. No, lest while you gather up the tares, you also uproot the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And at the time of the harvest, I'll say to the reapers, first gather together the tares and bind them in bundles to burn, but gather the wheat into my barn. All right, the parable, as we often define it, is that earthly story with a heavenly meaning. And as Jesus is teaching a lesson in something far more important than agriculture here, isn't he? And it's a tragic agricultural story because the crop isn't going to be what the farmer intended it to be. He planted wheat. If you plant wheat, what do you expect to grow? Wheat. And this is a tragic agriculture story because somebody came in, the enemy, the devil came in and he sowed the tares. There's a far deeper meaning to this parable here that Jesus is getting to. We say, what is a tare? We don't use that word very often in today's vocabulary. What is a tare? Well, in the contextual definition here, it implies that a tare is a plant that would grow and very much look like the real plant in its early stages. It looked just like the wheat growing up so that you couldn't tell. But as time passes, it becomes obvious that this little plant is nothing more than a glorified weed, a big old thistle that's going to spread. And it becomes intertwined in a certain degree with that good wheat, with its roots, and it begins growing up to where it would be almost impossible to pull that tare up out of the ground and not uproot the wheat with it. So what does the good farmer say to do to his servants? Just let it grow. Let it grow together with the wheat because they're attached, they're living together, they're intertwined. We need to take care of this at the harvest. I'll take care of it in due time. We don't have to guess what the meaning of this passage is that Jesus, of this parable is that Jesus gives in Matthew chapter 13. We've got the answer. We've got the answer. The answer starts in verses 36. We'll read here. Jesus sent the multitude away, and he went into the house, and his disciples came to him, saying, "Explain to us the parable of the tares of the field." And he answered and said to them, "He who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world. The good seeds are the sons of the kingdom, but the tares are the sons of the wicked one. And the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are the angels. Therefore, as the tares are gathered and burned in the fire, so it will be at the end of this age. The Son of Man will send out his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all things that offend, and those who practice lawlessness, and will cast them into the furnace of fire. There will be wailing and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine forth as the Son of the kingdom of the Father. He who has ears to hear, let him hear." You see, God's got a plan. There's a plan for the seeming inequities of life, the seeming inequities of the day. But there's a few things that I want us to think about this morning in connection to that. First of all, the devil is very much alive and at work in the world today. The devil is very much alive and at work in the world today. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8 reminds us to be sober, be vigilant, because our adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. The enemy in this passage is the devil. The enemy in your life is none other than that same devil. Know who he is. Recognize Satan for the challenges that he sets in front of you, for the obstacles and the stumbling blocks that he sets in your path. And appreciate the fact that God knows Satan too. He knows him well. He knows that he's a farmer and that he works hard to sow tares. God knows the challenges that you're facing, but he also provides you with a way to be victorious through Christ over this evil influence of the devil. Maybe to use this passage back in the sense of agriculture, not only is Satan deceitful and dangerous, but he is a diligent farmer. Where did these tares come from? They came from the enemy, the devil. The devil works, he plants, he's out there in the sun, he's out there in the cold, if need be, to plant these bad seeds where the good seeds ought to be. He's clever and he is crafty. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 3, Paul says, "I fear lest by some means the serpent who deceived Eve would also by his craftiness deceive your minds so that you may be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ." And one way that Satan accomplishes this work is through his children. It's through those tares. He plants them and they grow up and they spread. His tares are his product. They are his people, the work that he has of his hands. You know, one way, though, I guess we shouldn't be too surprised, though, should we, that there seems to be more tares in the garden than wheat? If you've got a garden going this spring, doesn't it seem like there's just more weeds to pull than tomatoes in the garden? More weeds than spinach or okra? They just never end. They never end. There's not been a single time in the history of time that God's people have been the popular people, or that God's way has been the popular way. Jesus taught on the Sermon of the Mount, we've got to enter by that narrow way. For wide is the way and broad is the gate that leads to destruction, and many go in by it. But narrow is the gate and difficult is the way, and few there are who find it. That's just finding it. Don't you think once you find that narrow gate that you still got a ways to go to reach the end? It's tough work being a Christian. Matthew chapter 7, verse 13 and 14 was that Sermon on the Mount. When we think about evil in the world and the discouragement that it may bring to our minds from time to time, we just need to appreciate the fact that there are some extensions of evil, and it may be pervasive in the roots and in the soil around us, and it may grow up and be demonstrated all around. That's the basic nature of the situation, and it's always been like that. Now, I don't mean to say that to discourage you, but our time that we're living in right now in 2014 is no different than it was in the 1530s when they were reforming the churches in Germany and England and Switzerland and France. They were not the popular people, those early Christians. They had to make their own way. They had to till ground that hadn't been tilled before, and it was hard work. We shouldn't feel singled out as people of faith, because it's always going to be tough. And in order to let our light shine, we're going to have to be able to dispel that darkness in the life around us. And we will have to overcome with sacrifice. The lives of the good and the evil are rooted together. The lives of the good and the evil are rooted together. And I think that's why the Lord is delaying the harvest time. He's letting them grow up together, just like the parable says. Both good and evil work together. They play together. They walk the streets together. May even within families live together. They go to school together and they work together. The circumstance that we find ourselves in this morning is one where there is a natural interaction. And one of the challenges that we face as children of God is to be in the world, but not what? Of the world. We got to live in the garden. We've got to have our roots down deep in the Lord. But somehow we got to not get so intertwined with the tares. While we find ourselves in connection with those who may be very diligently opposed to everything holy and right, we've got to be careful that that doesn't get on us. We've got to be sure that our actions are doing the influencing rather than us being influenced by those around us and being compromised from our values and our morals. But having said all that, we're living in the right here and the right now. And we do what we can to affect cause and change to those around us. We may be successful at times. We may be unsuccessful at other times. But we have to be strong in dealing with what seems to be the inequities of life. We need to appreciate the fact that the present circumstances do not certify your standing before God. The fact that the rooting up hasn't taken place yet in no way means that God is not going to keep His word. God's going to keep His word. He's got a plan. It doesn't mean that He's tarrying on accident. I want to read Matthew chapter 5 for you. I'm going to start in verse 48. Actually, I don't think that was my passage I was looking for. I think I got the wrong one wrote down. I apologize. This is the passage talking about the blessings that God provides to all of His people. Now, just because we may try to live a righteous life, and there are others who seem to live so wicked year after year, as the song said, God's going to continue to send blessings on the just and the unjust, the good and the evil. But He's giving us time. As we find in Romans chapter 2, verse 4, God is long-suffering, not willing that any of us should perish. But he's giving us some time. And I think he's giving us some time because hopefully somebody will realize that although I'm not living the life that the Lord wants me to, he keeps blessing me. I've got these nice things. I live comfortably. Maybe I ought to give credit to somebody for these good things in my life. And who should that be? Maybe I should give God the credit for those things. But then there's the story of the rich man that we find in Luke chapter 12. He was a man that lived his life completely without God. And as the parable teaches, he wasn't the least bit interested in anything godly or holy, yet he was a very wealthy man, a very prosperous man. I can imagine the Christians that were living around this man at that time thinking, well, this just doesn't seem right. We've got persecution, we've got torment and trouble from the Romans, and here's this man who's just living so prosperous. It's just not fair. But the moment came in that parable when the books were to be balanced, and God responded to that man, "You fool, the time has come. The time has come to balance the books." Now, whether that be at the end of that man's life, or as Matthew chapter 13 is talking about, the judgment day, you can be assured of one thing, that the books will be balanced. And we will be judged according to our works. The health of the body does not mean health of the soul always. Financial success does not always mean treasure in heaven. And a nice house here on this earth, on the beach, doesn't mean a nice house or a home in heaven. We need to learn to look through the eyes of faith rather than through the eyes of the flesh. To try to make a proper determination of things. Turn to 2 Peter chapter 3. I'm going to begin here in verse 8. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 8. But beloved, don't forget this one thing, that with the Lord one day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is one day. The Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some men count slackness, but is long-suffering toward us, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works therein will be burned up. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness? If you look down the road and you know that the judgment day is coming, if you believe that with all your heart, what manner of persons ought you to be? I know one thing. You don't want to be a tare. You don't want to be a tare on the day of judgment. Oh, but you know, it kind of looks like the wheat. It starts just like the wheat. It pops up out of the ground and it looks very similar. Lord, see, I've had some works that look similar to a Christian. And I've tried. I look like a Christian. Well, but you haven't been baptized. Oh, but you didn't fellowship with the saints at a local congregation. You didn't observe the Lord's table. You didn't sing on the Lord's day. You didn't have a simple heart that was fixed on me. You didn't tell me about any of your neighbors. You didn't share me. You didn't clothe any of the naked. Well, you looked like wheat, but it just wasn't good enough. Hey, you're either wheat or you're a tare. You're either on God's side or you're against Him. It's important for us to balance the fact that God has a plan, and there will be a time and a place where He will handle things at the time of harvest. Now, before we get too comfortable with knowing that God will take care of things and sit back and say, ah, they're going to get what's coming. They're going to get what's coming. They've been living it up and enjoying all these things. They're going to get it. before we get comfortable with that thought, we need to let them know that God loves them and that He cares about their soul and He's not willing that they should perish either. Remember 2 Peter chapter 3. How much He loves us and how much we were in that situation and undeserving of it as well. But in spite of His love, He has justice as well. And there is coming a time for that judgment to take place. In the end, there will be a great separation. Sheep on the right, the goats on the left. The wheat on the right, the tares on the left. The tares are cast into the furnace of fire, where it says there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And the wheat will be gathered together in the barn. And it says that the wheat, it's described that the righteous will shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father, Matthew chapter 13. Don't get discouraged. God's watching. He knows what's going on. He's got a plan. As I saw all these houses, I saw all these fancy things, I saw all these lavish foods and drinks and all this wonderful life that many people strive for. They just hope that they can make enough money so they can retire and live in one of these places. The only thing I saw down there was a big old thistle. A big old thistle that needed to be pulled up at the harvest time. Let's make sure that our affections are set on a simple work of Christ that's hard work in the garden. To try to keep it pure, try to keep the weeds out, try to keep it clean. The only way that we can keep ourselves clean is to be washed in the blood of Christ and to stay faithful until the very end. Stay faithful until the very end. This morning, if you need to have your life as a tare uprooted, to have it be cast away, to be taken care of, and have that root, that seed planted by Christ, and grow up as a wheat to be planted and watered, be encouraged by the brotherhood here, we invite you to do so as we stand and sing an invitation song. Number 27.
Be with me, Lord, I cannot live without Thee. I dare not try to take one step alone. I cannot bear the loss of life unaided. I need Thy strength to lean myself upon. Be with me, Lord, and then if danger threatens, if storms of life burst above my head, if flashing sea slip everywhere about me, they cannot hold.